This episode of Kentucky Deceased contains clips and references to the Church of Satan and Satanism, particularly from a conversation in the 1970s, as well as passages from the Satanic Bible. Please note that these are not the views of the Capital City Museum, nor its staff or its collections, but rather an important part of Frankfurt history for the conversations that came about as a result, of which you'll hear a little bit of during the caller section of the radio show that comes on in a few moments, so please be mindful of that. And without further ado, here's the episode. Put out your porch light, hold each other tight, and get ready for another night of Kentucky Deceased. I feel so blessed to be at the Capital City Museum for so many wonderful and amazing reasons. And one of the biggest reasons is because of Russ Hatter. If you've listened to this podcast in any sense of the word, listen, then you have experienced Russ to some degree. He is the reason we have the collections that we do, and so importantly, he is the person who took amazing notes and open-minded experiences relating to the Ouija board and the supernatural and paranormal in Frankfurt in the 1960s. And we're really lucky that he's still actually a contracted worker at the museum, so I get to see him all the time, talk to him all the time, and he has gifted me something absolutely astonishing that I am going to share with you all here. And I'm going to share just a little bit of background, and then we're just going to listen to the thing, and that will be this episode. So this is the last time you'll hear me until the closing of the episode, I promise. The 1960s/early 70s were a wild time for spiritualism. Like, stuff was happening that was crazy and wild, and people were exploring religion and relationships to God in like new and exciting ways. And I think we should definitely probably spend an episode really digging into that and what that looked like. But in Frankfurt, something surreal happened, and it was because of Russ Hatter. So at the time, he was working at WLKY radio station, and he was participating in both like musical radio shows as well as talk radio. And on a show called Let's Talk It Over, he became really interested in the ideas behind the Satanic Church. And so for this show, he wrote the founder of the Satanic Church, Anton LaVey, and suggested that Anton consider like coming on the show to talk about it. And while Anton couldn't do it, he did find a satanic priest from Louisville, Kentucky, who was the head of what's known as Grotto, the Grotto there, to come in and talk with him as well as a Christian priest at the radio station about the differences between Satanism and the church, or like Christianity, and like what that looks like and what that means. And so this episode, the rest of the episode, is going to be that conversation. So you'll hear three people speaking: the satanic priest, the Christian priest, and then Russ. So that's kind of a little context behind that. But if you've never heard of the Satanic Church before, but you've heard of the Satanic Bible, then you are semi-familiar with Satanism. But it's a little different than I think a lot of us maybe understand or appreciate Satanism. So yes, Satanism, or the Satanic Church, is founded on principles relating to Aleister Crowley and his practices of magic with a K, which is a little bit different than magic with a C. It's much more spiritual and conjuring. But one of the key tenets that you'll hear the priest speak of is that Satanism values putting one's own desires above all else. So it's not so much that Satan is God, there is no God. It's really more that each man is their own God. Each man is the arbiter of their own fate, or their willingness to do whatever they want, to consume whatever they want, to have sex with whatever they want, whoever they want. And you will hear about that. So content warning, please know that, content warning. But I want to just share a little bit from the Satanic Bible, which was written by Anton LaVey. And this is from the opening. Called the Black Pope by many of his followers, Anton LaVey began the road to high priesthood of the Church of Satan when he was 16 years old and an organ player in a carnival. On a Saturday night, I would see men lusting after half-naked girls dancing at the carnival, and on Sunday morning when I was playing the organ for tent show evangelists at the other end of the carnival lot, I would see these same men sitting in the pews with their wives and children, asking God to forgive them and purge them of their carnal desires. The next Saturday night, they'd be back at the carnival or some other place of indulgence. I knew then that the Christian church thrives on hypocrisy and that man's carnal sin will out. From that early time in his life, his path was clear. And finally, on the last night of April 1966, the most important festival of the believers of witchcraft, which I am going to blunder this word, but it looks like it's Walpurgisnacht. LaVey shaved his head in the tradition of the ancient executioners and announced the formation of the Church of Satan. He had seen the need for a church that would recapture man's body and his carnal desires as objects of celebration. Since worship of fleshy things produces pleasure, he said, there would be a temple of glorious indulgence. So that is well and truly how we have the Church of Satan today. And I really want to be clear that Satanism, as many of us think about it in Satanic Panic, is different but related to the Church of Satan. So Satanism approaches things with a little bit of a parody nature. They're a little bit tongue-in-cheek. They love to point out hypocrisy and like human relationships to God. And I'm going to share just like a little excerpt from the Satanic Bible just to give you a better understanding of that. Satanism represents kindness to those who deserve it instead of love wasted on ingrates. You cannot love everyone. It is ridiculous to think you can. If you love everyone and everything, you lose your natural powers of selection and wind up being a pretty poor judge of character and quality. If anything, it's used too freely, and it loses its true meaning. Therefore, the Satanist believes you should love strongly and completely those who deserve your love, but never turn the other cheek to your enemy. Love is one of the most intense emotions felt by man. Another is hate. Forcing yourself to feel indiscriminate love is very unnatural. And if you love everyone, you only lessen your feelings for those who deserve your love. Repressed hatred can lead to many physical and emotional ailments. And by learning to release your hatred towards those who deserve it, you cleanse yourself of these malignant emotions and need not take your pent-up hatred out on your loved ones. There has never been a great love movement in the history of the world that hasn't wound up killing countless numbers of people. We must assume to prove how much they loved them. Every hypocrite who has ever walked the earth has had pockets bulging with love. Every religionist claims to love his enemies, even though when wronged, he consoles himself by thinking God will punish them, instead of admitting to themselves that they are capable of hating their foes and treating them in the manner they deserve. They say, "There, but for the grace of God go I, and pray for them." Why should we humiliate and lower ourselves by drawing such inaccurate comparisons? Satanism has been thought of as being synonymous with cruelty and brutality. This is so only because people are afraid to face the truth, and the truth is that human beings are not all benign or all loving. Just because the Satanist admits he is capable of both love and hate, he is considered hateful. On the contrary, because he is able to give vent to his hatred through ritualized expression, he's far more capable of love, the deepest kind of love. So that's just to give you a little taste of the beliefs that Satanism brings to practitioners. Without further ado, we are going to hear a little snippet back in time. And I want to say a very, very special thanks this episode to our friends at the Kentucky Historical Society, especially Wyatt Woodson, for lending us the reel-to-reel player, which let us digitize these original magnetic tapes from Russ Hatter. So thank you very much to Russ, and thank you very much to Wyatt.
Am I correct? From the, you are a professor at the Cincinnati Bible Seminary, right? And Bob Dahl? I don't think he needs an introduction sitting in with us. So we get started. I have one question, then we want to give everyone equal time. Just noticing here in some of the literature which you sent in advance. As a Satanist, you will be encouraged to indulge in the so-called seven deadly sins, as they all lead to physical or mental gratification, and were only invented by the Christian Church to ensure guilt on the part of their followers, because it would be impossible for anyone to avoid committing these sins. Do you care to tell us about those sins?
Well, just commenting on a few of them in brief, the sin, say, of gluttony or of sloth. If you feel like eating a large meal, then you're committing one of those sins. If you like to lie in bed in the morning until noon, then you're committing another. And our view is that if it feels good, do it. If there's some particular human gratification you'd like to indulge in, which will give you pleasure and not be of a severe harm to, say, the community, such as sleeping late in bed, presuming you're not a fireman or something, then we say go ahead and do it.
Without limitations, in other words, unless this would be detrimental to someone else?
Right. Ours is basically a subjective philosophy. You have to make your own determination of what is permissible and what is not. In other words, what you can get away with. If you can get away with it, and it gives you pleasure to indulge in it, whatever it is, whether it's sex or sleeping late in bed, or whatever, then we would say, go right ahead and do it, and more power to you.
I could talk to you for 3 hours, but I'm not going to be selfish, but I know.
When you talk about these seven virtues or whatever you call it, isn't this whole thing, this Church of Satan, just sort of a put-on? I mean, I don't believe that anybody honestly believes this.
And you
actually honestly believe it, or is this just kind of a, is this a put-on where you want to be noticed? You want to be different?
No, I don't think so. Now, there is a lot of lampooning and a lot of satire in the way that we go about conducting our business. Whenever we make public announcements, public statements, we introduce a lot of humor into it, simply because the whole subject of devil worship, Satanism, black magic, and witchcraft is a very sensitive one in most parts of the country. There's been a lot of adverse publicity given to, say, animal sacrifices or the sacrifice of infants by unaffiliated witch cults. There's the bad publicity that was given to the Charles Manson incident in California. The Church of Satan itself has a very strict ban on any sort of human sacrifice or animal sacrifice.
Why?
Because we regard both animals and young human beings as being in a state of natural grace.
No, but you say that your church contends that if this gives you pleasure, then that makes it right. So why have a prohibition against killing babies if it gives you pleasure, or killing animals?
Well, that's a good point. Let me put it like this. If it feels good, do it. Okay, that's the basic guideline, indulgence instead of abstinence. But if you let that go whole hog, you'd have nothing but anarchy and lawlessness and, nationwide murder going on all the time. So, yes, we would set limits on it to the minimum possible extent.
But if
Jeffersonian.
Then this is just a matter of degree, then.
Yes.
In other words, you people still believe that there should be rules and regulations.
Yes, we do.
How are we going to evaluate anything? It seems to me, number one, that you don't have a basis for evaluation. There's no standard. There's no right or wrong, is there, in your view?
That's correct.
No right or wrong.
No, I don't agree. He said that they wouldn't kill infants or animals, so there is right or wrong then.
Well, we hesitate to use the terms either right or wrong, or good or evil. We would say that there are certain guiding rules, which the Church of Satan operates by in exchange for its own very loose philosophy of indulgence. Now, these guiding rules have a number of little bases on their own. For one thing, as an organization whose headquarters is in the United States, we do not advocate breaking any laws of the United States. If you want to rob a bank and you called up the Church of Satan to ask what our opinion was on it, we'd say no, don't do it. On the other hand, if a person were to call up and say, I'm interested in performing a very bizarre sexual experiment with my wife, am I going to come down, is any wrath going to come down on me for this, or am I doing a bad or immoral thing? And then we would say, this is not a moral question. Indulge with our goodwill and good wishes.
Reverend Ward, what do you say with your wife? Does that have any special meaning?
No. You could, with your girlfriend or boyfriend or your pet dog or whomever your wishes happen to be devoted to.
Your church believes in, believes in the practice of magic, simply defined as obtaining changes in accordance with one's will. Would you care to elaborate?
All right. We use the term magic fairly loosely because the popular image is of a person dressed in white or black robes, drawing circles and pentagrams on the floor, standing inside, reading from old and ancient books to conjure up a demon to perform his wishes, doing something that is, by all natural laws, impossible. Now, our magic is largely a pragmatic kind. We like to encourage a person to feel that he can accomplish anything if he desires to badly enough and if he goes about it with the right way. Our rituals, many of them, particularly the ones where a person will come in and ask for a wish to be granted, are not designed so much for the priest to lay his hand on the head of the man and say, it is happening. We will rather say, you wish to attract a certain girl. All right. What are her likes? What are her dislikes? What do you think she doesn't like about you? It's a sort of a cram. It's a sort of a cram course in lay psychoanalysis.
Are you really talking about again the power of focused mind power, concentration, belief?
Yes, I think so. It's more or less a case of a person believing that he can accomplish something and then going out and trying to do it.
How would you define the word devil?
Well, let me switch that over to the word Satan.
Yes, I should have said that.
And say that we would define God, first of all, as the balance factor in the universe, the consistency throughout the known universe, the fact that 2 plus 2 not only equals 4 here, but in New York City and on the constellation of Orion. Now, we would define Satan as a representative personification of the human ego, the individual human. We don't worship Satan as a god. We don't bow down to him, pray to him, and sing praises to him. We proclaim man as his own god to stand on his own strength or fall on his own weakness.
And you believe the creator of the universe, whatever name you'd care to use for a creator, we use that now anyway, he has no concern with human
life. That's correct.
Do you believe in a creator of the universe, or do you believe that this came about as an accident? Or
I would say we don't believe in a personality, in other words, a thought entity that created the universe, or if there is such a personality that it has any particular concern for human beings. In other words, we don't believe that any such agency is concerned with human affairs, whether we are nice to somebody or bad to somebody.
Well, do you think about
it's an irrelevance.
Why the world and the universe are here? I mean, where it started from, does that come into your religious
not really.
Anti-religious thinking?
No, we're not really that concerned with why we are here, because our simple answer to that is we just don't know. We'd like to be able to find out, but I don't think the answer lies through religion.
Now, you say that you don't believe in God, and the other gentleman here obviously does believe in God. He's a minister, mm-hmm. and he's a professor at a seminary which teaches ministers. Now, why do you believe in God? And how is your interpretation of it different?
Well, I would have to say that there are a great many reasons why I would have to believe in God outside of the historical evidence concerning Jesus Christ and the biblical revelation. And of course, in the final analysis, I would have to go back to the books, the documents, which we call the Bible, in which we have the evidence and the revelation of God. Now, if we reject this evidence, then I don't see how Charles would really know that there's a Satan or anything else in the world. And I wouldn't see how he would be able to say, now, we really shouldn't do that, or this is not so good, because it seems to me that he would undercut and undermine the total meaning of moral, ethical, truth, or any of these things that matter, and it becomes simply an anarchy that might be restrained for practical or pragmatic reasons, but I don't see how he can define and say, well, we really shouldn't do that to infants. Why not? Anything ought to go if, you know, there is no God, no judgment, no truth, no charity, let's say.
Well, let me respond to that directly, if I may. Insofar as, say, our prohibition on infant slaughter is concerned. Now, there are a number of unaffiliated witches, warlocks, crackpots, you name it, around the United States, who probably not only believe in that sort of thing, but go ahead and practice it. There was a case in Salt Lake City a couple of years ago when animals with their skins ritually stripped off were found. There was, of course, again, the Manson incident and cases of human cannibalism in Montana. In none of these cases was the church itself involved, because while we like the symbolism of Satanism and its generally permissive and free philosophy, we do recognize that, just like you said, you can't just take out all the stops. You can take out a lot many more than the Christian societies would allow you to take out, but you can't take them all out, or you will just have slaughter and murder and a very cruel law of the jungle. As far as Jesus Christ is concerned, we respect him quite a bit. We don't regard him as the Son of God, because we don't regard God as having the capacity to produce children. But we do like the philosophy of Jesus Christ. As a matter of fact, taken in the context of his own time, we have a very high regard for him as a Satanist.
This is Let's Talk It Over from WFKY. Frankfurt, back in just a moment. The song is Those Were the Days, but Belk's took the were out of it. These are the days for CV Savings at Belk's. They say variety is the spice of life, but at Belk's it's the quality of that variety that counts. You see, Belk's buyers are true artists in their field, and they have a flair for finding and stocking Belk's departments with the better of the best. All in all, Belk's is the place to shop for just about anything. And for most people, this means a greater selection of that which is appealing. Shop at Belk's first for what you have in mind. And right now, take advantage of Capital Value Days while you save even more during Belk's big January clearance. Save on sportswear, Russ Togs and Jean Castells. A complete rack of ladies' skirts at one-half price. Racks of dresses at one-third to one-half off. Girls' winter coats at one-third off. Electric blankets, regularly $15, now just $12.88. Men's insulated underwear, two-piece suits, was $10.99. During CV Days, just $6.88. Men's $5 dress shirts, now only $3.88. $4 sports shirts, now at $2.88. Women's crinkle pattern flats, reduced from $12 to $6. Boys' sport coats, regularly $11 to $13, but now only $9.88. And boys' flannel pajamas, regularly $3, now only $1.88. Again, at Belk's, it's the quality of the variety that counts. Belk's, 315 West Main, your happy shopping store.
There's more than one way to drive down the high cost of living. A small way is Plymouth Duster. A big way is Chrysler Royal. And a middle way is Plymouth Satellite. Coming through. Coming through at the right place. And maybe for you at just the right time. Because Plymouth Satellite is no run-of-the-mill car you're dealing with. It's a whole new idea in intermediates. New in shape front to back. New in ride on a wider track. It's America's newest Plymouth Satellite is, yet it's America's lowest priced two-door intermediate. All right?
coming through.
Ask about Marcus's convenient payment plans.
Okay, welcome back here to Frankfurt's Talk Radio, and I hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am. I'll be with you in just one moment, Bob Dahl. I want to say, Reverend Ward, at this point, we were talking about a creator a moment ago, that sort of thing.
Yes.
I like your honesty very much in saying, we don't know. I like that. Bob?
Thank you.
I'm interested, though, really, in a little of the history of this Church of Satan. Now, what's this thing all about? Who started it, and when was it started?
Mm-hmm. Well, the church itself grew out of a sort of an occult or black arts study group that was conducted in San Francisco for a number of years by Anton Zander LaVey, who grew up originally in Chicago, then moved to San Francisco. He had a number of various careers before he actually decided to form the Church of Satan, per se. He was a lion tamer, Clyde Beatty Circus, I believe, working with the cats there. Played calliope and later organ music, both with the San Francisco Symphony and on other occasions with nightclubs. He formed the church itself in 1966, what we would refer to as the year one. We have our own dating system now.
I noticed that on your letter.
And at that time, he decided to take his particular interest, the black arts, and codify it and make it into a system that would not only negate the dishonor that's traditionally been brought on witches and warlocks and various fiends and evil types throughout history, but form it into a progressive church that would not only preserve this, but also go after the various Christian sects, from the Roman Catholic Church down to your most fanatical Baptist, to force them to defend their philosophies, to sharpen their own wits, and at the same time sharpen ours. We're a devil's advocate.
Why?
Why? Well, to some of us, the Christian institution is an irritant. It proclaims an arbitrary moral standard and says, if you don't adhere to this particular code, then you're going to be punished for it. Why? Because the Bible says so. Why does the Bible say so? Because it's the Word of God. Why? Just because it is. Now, our satanic Bible is written by Anton Zander LaVey. If you don't like what it says, you can call him up on the phone and chew him out about it. It's rather hard to do that with the author of the Bible.
One thing interesting here, along this line, quoting from your literature again.
No, it isn't that hard. I think you folks are doing a pretty good job at it right now.
You're quoted here saying Satan as a god, personal savior, or whatever you wish to call him, was invented by the formulators of every religion on the face of the earth for only one purpose, that purpose to preside over carnal and so-called wicked activities and situations. Of course, anything indulgent or gratifying of a physical or mental nature must be evil. How else can people be assured of feeling guilty without actually going and hurting someone? Very good. Yes, sir.
I think that the great problem, of course, is over truth, if there's any truth, or if there is not. If there's no truth, then all of this is a mockery. What we're saying, these are only sounds, you know. We're like a bunch of baboons here beating on walls or making something, and it sounds something to us, but does not have any merit or value. And of course, I feel that without a belief in Jesus Christ and in the God of the Bible, then we would have utterly no foundation for truth. Man cannot of himself discover truth. And then when you say that you appeal to the Bible, or that you use the Bible, or allow it, or respect Jesus Christ, but look at what Jesus Christ says of Satan, that he's a liar and a murderer and the father of lies. Now, you can't take that if you really are serious, you know, about your Satan, because here Jesus is, of course, completely demolishing him as an individual.
Well, our Satan is not so much his biblical description as he is whatever we want him to be. Now, we could, by the same token, write the Satanic Bible to say God is a dirty old man who doesn't believe in letting people have fun. But we don't. We're fairly open-minded, and Satan himself is characterized differently from local grotto to local grotto, and even within a single grotto, which is a local congregation of the Church of Satan, he will change his personality from one week to another, depending upon exactly what sort of Satan people would like him to be. Now remember, he is not an individual. He's not somebody with a tail and horns who pops up in a cloud of smoke. He is simply a representation of the human ego. Now,
by your definition,
yes,
you mean?
Yes.
Of course, a lot of other people repudiate this.
Yes, but this is what I mean by there being no absolute truth. The Bible says, the Christian Bible says, Satan is a very nasty individual. We say he isn't. We are able to live very comfortably on this assumption, but we would say across the board that there are very few, if any, absolute truths, and we do not think that the Christian Bible includes very many absolute truths.
Which one of the Ten Commandments do you absolutely differ with?
Oh, the Christian commandments?
Yes, Ten Commandments.
Well, we wouldn't say that they are wrong across the board, or we wouldn't even say that one particular one is wrong. Now, take thou shalt not kill. Right now, in the armed forces of the United States, almost every major Christian denomination is represented by a chaplain. These chaplains will convince you in South Vietnam that if you go out and slaughter yea so many Viet Cong, that it will not particularly ruin your record in heaven, even though that is against that commandment. We would say, okay, you're given an order to go out and kill. You're not in a position to disobey it. You'll get into trouble if you don't, and it'll make life very rough for you. Go out and kill, and don't worry about it.
Now, Charles, you know that according to Hebrew authorities, that the word translated kill there is actually the word murder. You're aware of this, that this is a better, much better translation. You'll find all modern scholars indicating that this is the meaning of the word. Murder is a much different thing, because kill, in a very broad sense, and how could you kill a chicken, you know, that you might have for dinner then? You see,
yes,
in the absolute sense.
Yes,
so
I
think we ought to use murder.
Okay, we're talking about murder in the sense of killing people, as opposed to dumb animals.
In this case, under, as you said, the government's direction and control, and you said we're supposed to be citizens and we have to obey law.
Yes.
Or should.
Because in this particular instance, you're obeying laws because you have decided to live in the United States. If you're going to live in the United States and get away with living in the United States, then you'd better obey the laws, or the Department of Justice will come down on your neck. Now, if you're going out to kill, frankly, I don't see any difference between kill and murder, because the victim doesn't know any difference between the two terms. He's dead either way. We would simply say, if the country under whose contract you are living says kill, and you feel that you have to kill or murder, depending upon whether you're in the overt killing agencies such as the army or one of the more clandestine ones, then we would say do it, and don't worry about offending any higher morality, because your morality is determined by your circumstances.
As a general thing, to members of this Church of Satan believe that there is no life hereafter?
We don't proclaim this one way or the other. We are, I would say, agnostic in this sense. We would say, to the best of our knowledge, no person has called back from an afterlife to inform us of what's there. We are not mystics or seance holders or anything like this, so we consider all that as just so much balderdash. We would say, live your life as you think you'd like to live it, as you think, in your own opinion, you are justified in living it, because justice, again, is subjective. There are very few criminals who think they've been nasty people, unless they've been educated back into a a form of thought that they didn't hold at the time they committed their special crime. But we say, live your life as you think you'd like to live it, and don't worry about what happens afterwards. If it turns out that there is a heaven and a hell, you obviously aren't going to make it into heaven. And down in hell, everybody's going to be your friend already, so why worry? Just join in the party.
Of course, according to the Christian, in hell, and this is the main source of our information, and you haven't been there and I haven't, so we are dependent, and God, if there be a God, see, just might be giving us some inside information on it. And according to him, there's no fellowship in hell, there's no friendship, there's no companionship or anything of the kind. Therefore, I would suggest, you know, that you're taking a big risk, aren't you, Charles? Because it just might turn out to be a very, very terrible place.
That's true, but I think that if we do find ourselves in hell, that the Satanists in question will be wielding the pitchforks, and the hypocritical Christians who did not grant their actual indulgences will be on the receiving end of the pitchforks.
Is that all Christians? When you say hypocritical
Christians? Just the ones who proclaim that they're doing good and actually are quite obnoxious individuals.
All right.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
We don't want that.
Well, actually, though, what they're doing, they're the ones that are hypocritical about the Christian church, they're just following this Church of Satan thing.
Yes, but they're not admitting it. They are hypocrites.
Let's take this call. Talk radio, go ahead.
Who am I talking to?
That's Ron Cordell.
The fellow that's talking about the Satan of church, could I make a comment?
Yes, you certainly make it. Right ahead.
Well, I was just wondering what kind of a fellow he was.
I'm not going to try to answer that for him.
Well, could I talk with you?
You are.
Certainly, yes.
Can you hear him on your radio?
Uh-huh. Yes. Can you hear me now?
Uh-huh.
All right. Certainly, ask any question away.
Well, I just wonder what kind of nut he was.
Kind of a nut I am, yes. Well, I'm 24 years old, I'm extremely good looking, and I have a very radiant personality. How can I elaborate from there?
And he doesn't talk like a nut, by the way.
No, he doesn't talk like one, but he sure sounds like one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd have to remind the listeners to take all of this with a grain of salt, because if following Satan, who's the father of lies, then Charles really can't be committed to ever speaking the truth. So when he says he has a radiant personality or something like this,
I'm really a pretty despicable person, yes.
Of course, they may evaluate that by listening to the program, I would imagine. Who has a question? I like that.
Did it all go?
I like that.
Getting back to this thing about the existence of life hereafter, I read an article about the Church of Satan in Time magazine, and I've had a chance to glance at some of your literature here.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't this whole thing just, wouldn't it be better to call this, for instance, the satiric Bible? Isn't this whole thing just an out-and-out put-on, really?
Well, a lot of persons have approached us and said, why all the mystery and the theatrics? Why not just call yourselves humanists and forget all
that
the...
That would be a rather loose use of the word, I think.
Well, we like humanism as a practical philosophy, but we would say also that we believe in man's requirement for ritual and dogma and theatrics and ceremony.
Why?
So this is what we use.
What puts that into a man?
Relaxation. His desire for a little bit of entertainment. Instead of watching TV, we go downstairs and conduct nameless rites and unspeakable orgies.
Let's take this call. Ron Cordell, go ahead.
I would like to speak to the Church of Satan.
You are.
I would like to know how he thinks that he was created, how he got in this world.
We've really covered that, but I'm sure you'll be happy to answer again.
Could you repeat your question, ma'am? I couldn't quite hear you.
How did he think he got in the world?
How'd you get into the world?
Oh, Courtesy of my mother and father and a little bit of cellular biology, I think.
Well, back through the time, how do you think man or your mother or father or human and women existed on the world? How do you think they came into being?
Well, they came into being courtesy of their own fathers and mothers, I would think. And if you carry that back far enough, you will, I think, trace us all back to a bunch of furry little animals wiggling around in the prehistoric times.
Well, you said you believed in Jesus, that you had respect for Jesus. If you don't believe in God, how do you believe?
Hello?
How do you think there is a Jesus if you don't believe in God?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, hello?
How do you think there is a Jesus or Jesus Christ if you had respect for this man?
Well, we're not altogether certain upon what authority Jesus did exist as an individual or did not. But granting that he does, just assuming that he, well, that he did, rather, we have respect for him in the same way that we'd have respect for Lao Tse or Confucius or Marcus Aurelius or Plato or any other of the great philosophers, except that we would say Jesus Christ proclaimed a very gentle and a very humanistic philosophy at a time when the world was extremely cruel, when the prevalent theologies were the Roman and the Greek and the Persian and the Egyptian, which did not have much regard for man as an individual. Now, to this extent, as a matter of fact, as I said earlier on the show, we would identify Jesus Christ as a practicing Satanist, because he raised up man as an individual. But we later see that through the Roman Catholic Church and then through its various offshoots, Jesus became institutionalized. And if you weren't a Christian, you became persecuted. You were threatened. And this we don't like. We have a lot of respect for Christianity when it originated and in its own time context. But we don't think it's a cross that everybody else has to bear later on when it becomes outmoded. There's no dogma in our Satanism because it's a progressive philosophy that may change from year to year. And we don't see this element in Christianity.
Well, how do you think that the trees in the world, and how do you think that miracles and things were performed? Do you think Satan done
that? I don't really think there were any miracles performed, really. I can't say for certain because I wasn't there. But I would say that things that may have seemed miraculous to the people at the time were probably just natural phenomena.
Well, I'm not very much older than you are, and I have been witness to two miracles myself.
Could you tell me about them, please?
Well, one of my children was very sick one time, and the doctor said if he lived, it would be a miracle. Well, he was 2 years old now, he's 7, and he's doing fine.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that, anyway.
And my husband had cancer, which was terminal cancer, and he was cured of that. So, in my belief, this was God's miracle, because the church that I belong to and everybody around prayed to God, not to Satan, for this miracle, and he performed it.
Well, now, if I happened to be one of your close friends at the time, I would not have prayed to Satan or God, but I would have certainly been very grateful to the doctors who were in attendance at the time.
Well, see, at the time, the doctors had given my child up, especially my child, said there was nothing else they could do. That if he lived, it would be a miracle, God's miracle, not Satan's.
Well, It's actually rather hard for me to say yes or no, because, again, Satanists don't say that we know all the answers.
Yeah. No miracle. Well, with all my heart and soul, I believe in God and Jesus Christ as my Savior. And I believe in miracles.
Well, fine.
I have never seen God, but I believe in this. But if you believe in Satan, well, how can you say yes or no?
Well, we don't say, no, there can never be a miracle performed by anybody. We don't say God does not exist. We act on the assumption, because none of us who are in the Church of Satan have been given sufficient evidence to the contrary. Now, if you are satisfied that God exists and that in this particular instance a miraculous salvation was achieved for your son and your husband, then we're all for it. If you're happy in your beliefs, then more power to you.
Have you ever really seen this God, this person you proclaim as your God, Satan?
Oh, we don't proclaim him as our God. We proclaim man as his own God. Satan is a representation.
Well, the thing that you worship, have you ever seen it?
Huh? Have I ever seen him?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, I see him every time I look in the mirror.
Well, maybe that's the way we feel about our God.
Fine.
That deep in our soul, we can feel him or in our heart.
Let's take another call.
All right.
Okay, thank you for calling. Ron Gordell, go ahead.
I'd like to speak to him.
He's on the line.
Here I am.
Hello. Well, you know the way I feel. The Bible tells us that Christ purchased the blood of the church with his own blood. And the church belongs to Christ and not Satan. And the Bible also says that the angel sinned against God and was cast out into hell as Satan. And I think you better go back to hell.
That's enough, lady.
Charles, I still don't see how seriously, you know, if this is nothing more than a comedy act, how you can at all have any respect for Jesus Christ when he made the claims that he did, unless you throw all of that out, in which case you abandon the whole position. And when he says, I am the way and the truth and the life, no one comes unto the Father, and you say that's the balance of nature,
okay? We think you'd be getting a little thick then.
Yes. How then do you pick and choose, you know, according to your own merit here? I don't think you can do that, see. Either you should throw him out or take him at his word.
We don't like to deal in absolutes. We wouldn't say we don't like Jesus Christ altogether, or we wouldn't say we endorse him altogether. We'd simply approach him as another individual human being and say, he made a lot of mistakes, he said a lot of very worthwhile things, and the ones that we like and that we believe were well said, we will adhere to. The ones we don't like, we reject.
I'd like to ask one question about this. What really is the value of something like the Church of Satan? What does it do, first of all, for the people that belong? And what does it actually do for the community and for the world?
As an institution, it is not philanthropic. It does not set out to perform any community projects. In other words, it is not a beneficent or a benevolent organization. It's a very selfish organization. We exist to serve the interests of our members, and that's it. And if other people agree with our philosophy and would like to join, then so much the better. As far as what it provides the individual member, we would say that it's first and foremost, for the lay Satanist, a form of mental relaxation and freedom from inflicted guilt. Outside of that, it's simply a philosophical college which tries to elevate the mind of man to a situation in which he is not forced down by any one proclaimed truth or proclaimed dogma.
We're going to take one call, then we'll have a brief break and be back in. Ron Cardell, go ahead.
I just want to pose two questions, and I'll listen on the radio for the answer. Number one, according to the man's statement a few moments ago, what were Jesus' mistakes? And the second question, what did he say to do that a person couldn't conform with today to live a better life? So what were Jesus' mistakes, and what did Christ say to do that would not benefit a person living after those statements?
Okay, thank you. I wouldn't want to answer you with a quote of Jesus, because we don't take that much of an issue with the man as we do with the institution that arose out of that man. Now, insofar as Jesus himself is concerned, if he did in fact refer to himself as a personalization of God on earth, and that he was infallible and could say no wrong, then we would take issue with that. Now, if he said, thou shalt... getting my time context out of order here. If he said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, then we would say that's a very fine statement. Go to it. That was a very brilliant man making a very brilliant statement. Where we really get our roughs up is when the institutions of the formal churches of Christianity came along and turned the sayings and the philosophy of Jesus into a very coercive system of almost practical government of a man's morals. that would say you cannot engage in love or in the love act with a person other than your wife, even if you're not married. Or you cannot engage in the love act even with your wife in certain strange ways or on certain strange days. In some parts of Europe, if you adhered to the strict rules of the Roman Church, you could have sex with your wife about 30 days out of a year. So you can imagine how frustrated some of these people became, causing them to wander out into the dark and worship a goat.
I don't want to be objectionable about this, but I'm a member of the Roman Church and have been all of my life. First of all, I think some of your history is without foundation. And secondly, some of the quotations about what the Roman Catholics believe and don't believe are also without foundation. And as I say, you know, if this is a big put on, I think that's fine, but I think that it would be better if you had more fact to rely on. Now, I don't know anything about thing in the Catholic Church that says you can have sexual relations. 30 No, really, I've never heard any, and as I say, I've...
That's medieval.
And I have been... educated. I've been educated in the Catholic schools, and I've read a great deal of history. And as I say, I think many of these things that you're quoting are rather loosely quoted.
Well, I can only say this: I can't quote any specific source, but the books that I do glean this information from are not occult books. They are regular old history books. I have many books that are published, for instance, by the Catholic Church, and there are more radical Jesuit offshoots. And I don't like to throw around any accusations loosely. I am simply citing, for instance, the sexual prohibition as an example of how distorted the original Christian
dogma. Well, the only thing I want you to do, I want you to give me exactly the quotation. What book you read and who said it. Now, that's what I want to know.
I can't do that. I simply don't have the books with me.
Let's do that after a break.
Again, Goodyear shoots down the high prices. Again, Goodyear Service Store in Frankfort and General Electric team up to bring you extra special factory prices on all GE appliances and television. For this super special three-day sale, Goodyear has the GE high-speed dryer at only $118, the GE heavy-duty washer with mini basket just $188, the GE 12-foot upright freezer $178, 144 square inch GE portable TV, $68. GE color console, $399. GE AM/FM stereo, $168. How about these terrific Goodyear prices on new General Electric appliances? Also, Goodyear has a large stock of trade-ins, repossessions, bent and dent items, all dirt cheap. Now, for the good ride, Goodyear has the complete set of four double-action shock absorbers for just $36.95 installed. Don't wait. Hurry to your Goodyear service store on 2nd Street in Frankfort. Buy now and get terrific prices. Your credit is good at Goodyear.
Capital Value Days mean special price events at Hudson's on Main Street. CB Day coincides with Hudson's final winter clearance. All remaining fall and winter stock now up to 50% off. Save on famous make better suits and fine tweeds and knits. Winter coats and car coats at great reduction. Dresses and knits for misses and juniors in half sizes. Hudson's has a fine selection in their sportswear department. Blouses, sweaters, skirts, slacks, coordinate sets, jumpers.
Welcome back here to Frankfurt's Talk Radio. Lady called just a moment ago, and she doesn't want to be on the air, but Reverend Ward, she does have some questions, and it's three-part, actually. The first part is how you were. I'm not sure I understand just exactly what she was implying, but what type of individual were you before you became a member of this organization?
Well, I'm a Californian. I grew up in San Francisco and Santa Barbara. I graduated from the University of California with a bachelor's degree in political science. And my religious interests up until that time were pretty bland and pretty well agnostic. I became an Eagle Scout in the Boy Scouts of America, and part of their program, particularly with the duty to God aspect, considers that a person should investigate religions even if he hasn't found one that he likes. So in due course, I visited Jewish temples, Confucian, Buddhist organizations, Roman Catholic, Lutheran, the whole general flock. And I was disappointed, really, in all of them, because I considered them rather stale philosophies across the board.
You've actually answered two parts there, because the other was about your philosophy up to that time.
I see.
She wants to know how you would compare the Church of Satan with atheism.
We are not really atheists, because an atheist proclaims, bang, there is no God. There is simply no God. We are simply a complicated chemical reaction. Now, we would not be so bold as to say that, because at the moment we don't consider man omniscient. We would say, we just don't know, but we're acting on an assumption that man is a free agent and that he's not under the punitive eye of a higher intelligence. So we would, instead of being atheists, we would be agnostic.
I see. Ron Cordell, go ahead.
Been listening to him on radio, and I'd like to ask how is the church supported, or where do they get their money? I mean, the Christian church is tithes and all such as that, but how do they support themselves?
All right, when a person joins the Church of Satan, he pays an initial fee of $20. He pays no further membership fees for life, except that if he wishes to remain on an active status to get all the publications, in national and international, and to be on all the mailing lists and all this sort of thing, then he pays $10 a year. Now, this money is not used by the local grottos. It is sent to the Central Grotto in San Francisco. This money is used by Anton LaVey, the high priest of the church, to pay the costs of running the church, the paper used, postage used, and to support whatever activities of the church he thinks are necessary. After that, the excess money goes in his own bank account, and he's very open about it. Now, individual local grottos are not really encouraged to exploit the membership financially. For instance, the people in my own grotto in Louisville do not pay any money to me to participate. If I have the desire to run a grotto, I run it out of my own pocket. And if people want to contribute a little bit now and then for a sheet of postage stamps or something, then fine. But they're no higher in my favor because of this, or lower in my favor because they don't. If I have any sort of a large project that I want to throw, or if, for instance, I have to fly to another city for another appearance or something, then I can always ask San Francisco to underwrite it. But we do not believe in drawing money out of the membership.
Time for one more question. I want to ask you about rituals.
Okay, thank you.
We have about 1 minute left. If we could talk about your actual worship service or whatever you want to
All
call
right.
it here.
The satanic ritual.
All right, fine.
Okay, we do not practice the black mass per se. That term we use as symbolizing a blasphemous and very crude reversal of Catholic mass. That's where you find all the bizarre sexual experiences, the baby sacrifice, and so on. What we term the satanic mass is not directed against any other religion per se. It is merely a subjective psychodrama for the benefit of the individual participants. If a person is a little inhibited about making an attack against his boss, or an attack against his wife, or in feeling compassion for somebody that he has a hang-up and that he hates a lot, then we try to encourage him to come out of this particular mental block that he's got. Sometimes we try to put people under a lot of mental pressure to conceive of things that they previously thought illogical. Can you conceive of 2 + 2 being 5 in the best tradition of George Orwell? Yes, you can, if you're put under enough mental stress. We like a person to be aware of both the limitations of his mind and the possible expanses that it may attain.
Reverend Ward?
I agree on two or three points here that are, I think, important, Charles. One, I wish that you could see and center on the person of Christ, you've spoken of him, and not get all hung up in these denominational sectarian organizations. So why don't you forget those, as it were, and go back to original Christianity, if you would?
Definitely.
And I'm afraid the Holy Bible doesn't quite make it. Then you wouldn't have had all these tremendous splits within the Christian theologies. Now, we would say that we wouldn't center our philosophy on the person of Christ or use him as a standard. We use each other and ourselves as standards. I am my own God. I am Satan. To Steve, the secretary of the Grotto sitting in here with me, he is his own God. He is the center of his own intellectual universe.
Gentlemen, we're out of time. I want to thank you very much, Bob.
Ryan, I imagine that this will be one of our talked about radio programs. Certainly we've had a tremendous amount of participation tonight. And I might say that for those folks who have read, I'm sure that everybody has run across this satanic church thing. And our point, and there'll be people who will say, why would you have something like that on the radio? It's our view here that as things go on in the world, that our listeners should have an opportunity to get a balanced report on what is going on in the world. And we certainly appreciate this young man coming up to be with us tonight, and for so cordially answering our questions.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Very quickly, a mailing address, by the way, is Post Office Box 19264, 19264, Louisville, Kentucky, 40219.
And in the way of balance, this other gentleman here is an authority on the Bible and what have you, and if somebody would like to write to you about the Bible...
2700 Glenway Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio.
So you have your choice, or you can write to both of them. And I found this quite interesting tonight.
That's the show tonight from Talk Radio here at Frankfurt, WFKY. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Kentucky Deceased. This is a limited release podcast that's put out every year by the Capital City Museum in Frankfort, Kentucky. I'm your host, Dr. Eleanor Haskin Wagner, the Museum and Historic Sites Supervisor, which is a fancy way of saying museum director. This podcast has been produced and edited by Clay Wallace, who is phenomenal and wonderful. Thank you, Clay. We're grateful you're here. The Capital City Museum wants to ensure that we recognize that the land upon which the museum now sits, known as Frankfort, Kentucky, is primarily East Cherokee, Osage, Uchi, Shawnee, Hopewell, and Edina land. The museum recognizes that this land is the traditional homelands of many indigenous nations and continues to remain home to those who have been marginalized and subjugated throughout history. We are committed to decolonizing our thinking and providing historical context to aspects of our collection which perpetuate dangerous ideologies of white supremacy. If you have any advice or suggestions or ways that you want to help us do this, we would absolutely love that. This podcast is a limited release, so it will come out every week in October, and we are so excited you're here. We get to say this is an award-winning podcast now, so if you want to learn more about the Capital City Museum or the other work that we do, please come visit us. We are open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 4, at 325 Ann Street in Frankfort, Kentucky, and as always, we are free admission. If you want to check out our online presence and learn more about different tours that we do, you should give us a look at capitalcitymuseum.org. If you want to help us do podcasts like this one or any of our other wonderful slated podcasts, please donate some money at capitalcitymuseum.org. We are a 501c3, so any amount you give us helps make sure we can keep doing cool stuff like this. Thank you so much.